York sports fans. I'm Danielle McCartan. I'll be talking all things New York sports with you right for the next 4 hours, right up till 12 midnight here in New York City and beyond. It is good to be back. Thank you for tuning in. Connor Green and I are coming to you live from the Mike Francesa studio here in Lower Manhattan, 888-808-1019. Call me up. Be part of the conversation. It is an exciting time in New York sports, no doubt about it. And live from New York, it's Saturday night. We got the Rangers tied up 1-1 at the Garden. And we are on the precipice of what could be a Subway World Series. That's right. On June 15th, the odds of a Subway World Series happening were plus 25,000. Yesterday, just yesterday, they were plus 210. Lucky for me, though, I put $5 down on 10 p.m. Friday night, August 23rd. I must have been feeling it. I don't know what was going on. I got those plus 25,000 odds. I did. I wish I'd put more, right? That's always the famous last words there. But yes, this has the potential to really happen. Can you imagine how electric this city would be if the Mets and the Yankees squared off in the World Series? I mean, I was 12 when the first time it happened in 2000, so a little bit different as an adult, you know, in the business now. But someone asked, I don't know who it was, but somebody asked Aaron Judge about basically that, you know, what it would feel like and be like in this city if the Mets and the Yankees squared off in the World Series. Here's what he had to say.
It's going to be definitely a fun time in New York, man. They're having a great season, and it'll be fun to look forward to down the road getting a chance to face them again.
I mean, it's almost impossible not to let your mind go down that road, go down that path. I mean, there are four teams remaining, right? So, I don't know. I just think as an adult, like a grown adult, especially in the field, I just every night I pray for this matchup every single night. And not to mention the field. Like I just said, the field, in order to get there, is set. Mets-Dodgers game one tomorrow night. First pitch, 8:15 p.m., the same as the Giants kickoff, which we'll talk about the Giants a little later in the show. Guardians at Yankees, game one Monday night. First pitch about half an hour or so before the Jets kickoff. And, of course, we'll talk about the Jets debacle, the Jets disaster a little later in my show, too. Oh, also, while I have your attention, 8:40 p.m., a live call-in from the doctor, Dr. K, Doc Gooden. But before, I mean, we're not there yet. We don't have a Subway World Series on our hands just yet. The Yankees have to win one more series, and the Mets have to win one more series. Each are four games away, and there are inherent challenges built in to each of those respective series. Let's not put the cart before the horse here. And, you know, at this point, to me, the opponent is the opponent. And at this juncture of the season, it's more about the challenges presented within one's own team. So what are the challenges the Mets are going to have to overcome in their quest to punch a World Series ticket against the Dodgers? Since they're chronologically first, we'll take them first. This regular season, the Mets were 2-4 against the Dodgers. The Mets were outscored 36-20, and twice they gave up a 10 spot to the Dodgers. But the truth is, that was a baseball lifetime ago. That was a baseball lifetime ago for these Mets, way before Grimace, way before the Hawk to a disgrace, for example. And since roughly then, the Mets and the Dodgers have had the same win percentage. And in fact, more precisely, since May 15th, the Mets have won more regular season games than the Dodgers have. So maybe that's a positive after all. Positive spin on that. But number two, Edwin Diaz, not so positive. He has not been good in all three of his postseason appearances. Totaled 3 1/3 total. ERA of 8.10. Yes, I checked it twice. Edwin Diaz has a postseason ERA this year of 8.10. He walked two in Game 3 against Milwaukee. He walked one, gave up two hits and three runs in Game 2 in Philly. And then in Game 4, he walked two more. I mean, that's a problem. But the optimistic Met fan would point out that Diaz, he told everybody earlier this morning that he's had a change in his mentality. He said, quote, "I think I'm trying to be too perfect. Instead of going after hitters like I usually do, just trust your stuff and go after the hitters." Okay, Edwin Diaz, I'll believe it when I see it, because it hasn't been good so far. And along that same vein, as a whole, the Mets' relief pitching, their walk rate, or that unit's walk rate, is really high. Highest in the National League in the regular season, to be precise. They've actually walked more in the postseason, by the way. The Mets' relief pitching, they walk 12.4% of batters they face. Now, you played baseball. I'm sure you've coached baseball. You don't need me to tell you that good opponents will make you pay in two different ways. When you're issuing free passes like that, and when you're giving away outs in the field, those guys always end up scoring, don't they? The Dodgers, by the way, are 10th in the league. 10th in the league, regular season, in stolen bases per game. And the Mets, for context, well, the Mets are 16th. And the number four challenge I foresee the Mets having to overcome in order to punch their ticket to the World Series. With the other series going until Game 5, I mean, that was the best thing to happen for the Mets, because they wrapped their season, their series up in four, allowed Mendoza to choose his starting pitcher, and the Dodgers are completely behind the eight ball with their pitching rotation, which isn't too strong. And earlier today, Carlos Mendoza told everyone his plan was to have Kodai Senga pitch Game 1, and the reasoning being, his words, not mine, to keep it as close as possible to his routine. The plan is then to pitch Manaea, Sean, in Game 2. So Senga in Game 1 would allow the lefty Peterson to kind of piggyback with Senga, which, I don't know, man. I think I'm always afraid of, at this point in the season, the overexposure of the bullpen, of the relief arms. And I think back to that Yankees series against Houston, where Boone entirely had such a quick hook. Houston caught on to the relief pitching, and that was the end of it. So that, to me, I would love to see, like, Senga, of course, is going to go, what, 3 to 4 innings? I would like to see Manaea in Game 1, quite honestly, pitch 7 innings and shut the door. That's what I want to see in Game 1. Carlos Mendoza didn't see it that way. Okay. He thought it would be more important to keep Senga as close as possible to the routine. Okay. Now, challenges for the Yankees. There are three. Number one, Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole's going to start Game 2. And why is that a challenge? Well, because I'm very afraid that it could be Carlos Rodon, the volatile Carlos Rodon in Game 1. Boone said it's not going to be heel. Rodon in Game 1 would stink. We'll find out tomorrow morning, Sunday morning, because in Rodon's only division series appearance, he lasted just 3 2/3, excuse me, against the Royals. Gave up a home run. Royals tagged him for 4 runs, earned runs, that is. And the Yankees ended up losing that game. Guess what? 4-2. And I actually don't want to see the volatile Carlos Rodon on the mound in Game 1 of the ALCS, setting the tone moving forward. I just don't. The other option, Clark Schmidt, he was marginally better in his only DS start, 4 2/3 with 2 earned runs. So he pitched a little bit longer with a little less runs given up, fewer runs given up. But at least the Yankees ended up winning that game 3-2. But this all circles back to the fact that Gerrit Cole, the Yankees ace, won't get the ball to start the series off, set the tone. And that worries me big time. Aaron Judge, the number two challenge for the Yankees in this ALCS. I mean, where has he been? I mean, luckily the Yankees have been winning games despite Aaron Judge's inability to get it done. But man, I hate to say this about him. He's been a choke artist this 2024 postseason. Worse than his average choke artist job in the postseason. He doesn't play well in his career in the postseason. And up through, and not including this season, he hit on average .211. This year, he's got just 2 hits to his name and a batting average that he just got up to 154. An OPS of 620. Exactly zero home runs. And I mean, every number, every statistic you look at, don't, because it's bad. And, you know, to the good old eye test, I mean, his at-bats, they look futile. They always seem like they end in a strikeout on that lower outside quadrant. So what I did, of course, I did some math. Your eyes are not deceiving you. Aaron Judge has struck out in, just round up, it's like 38.7%. So Aaron Judge has struck out in just about 40% of his postseason at-bats this year. And if there was ever a time for him to break out of it, right about now sounds like a great time. And this is an alarming trend. It's alarming. And it's a significant challenge for the Yankees, because unless Aaron Judge can get himself going, I'm not sure the Yankees can punch their tickets to the World Series. And the final challenge for the Yankees moving forward, I'm going to point to first base. Boone said late this afternoon he'll make a decision on Rizzo's roster status on Monday. Okay, well, I fully expect Anthony Rizzo to not be playing in the ALCS. So I looked at Cabrera and Birdie, what they've done offensively. Against the Royals, 3-for-12 with 4 walks. And you'd have to think that an uninjured Anthony Rizzo would have had a bigger offensive impact than that. So again, I just don't think he's going to be a part of it this round. And, you know, you just hope, and I know it hasn't yet, but you just hope that the defense at first base does not let the Yankees down in a big moment when the competition gets ratcheted up, situational play is magnified. You know, you don't want them, or whoever it is playing first base, screwing up mentally on a play at first base. That just can't happen. So, hopefully. I know hope is never really a real strategy, though. Oh, and by the way, in case you're curious, the Yankees, in the regular season, 4-2 against the Tigers and the Guardians. So any which way, they had a winning record against who they were going to face. And by the way, against the Guardians, most are pretty like high-scoring games, like 8, 6, 7 runs. So that's something of note, I guess. And in conclusion here, I'm going to wrap this up before we get to your calls at 888-808-1019. While it's fun, while it's exciting to start talking about and dreaming about and wishing for a Subway World Series, I'm sorry to have to douse you with a little bit of reality, because don't forget, both teams have to get there first. And as I just outlined, both teams have significant challenges to overcome in order to punch their tickets to the Fall Classic. I'm Daniel McCartan, 888-808-1019. In the order that you call, that's how we do it here. We go out to Jamaica, and Moose is on line one. What's up there, Moose?
What's going on, Coach McCart? Good evening. How are you? First time, long time.
Oh, I love that. Thank you. Thanks for being the leadoff caller of the night here.
No problem. Like, listen, like, honestly, like, I've been listening to you since, like, 2021, 2022. With every Yankees season, every week that passes, you show up on the weekend. You call it like the coach. You're like a baseball. You're a base pass guru. You broke it down impeccably with your open. You attacked it. So don't be surprised that your bet might actually come through, like, a week and a half from now, because you see it like the coach. You schematically, your eyes don't lie to you. So that being said, I'd like to break down the matchup with the Cleveland and Yankees even more so. So first things first, like looking at the rotations, you have to say the Yankees kind of have a marginal advantage, because the best pitcher for Cleveland, Bybee, is like a solid number two borderline all-star starter. The second best pitcher, Gavin Williams, is like a solid number three on most teams, and everybody else is like a 4 or 5.
Correct. Well,
like,
I agree with you. Yeah. I totally agree with you. What scares me about the Guardians most for this Yankees team is the fact that they're pretty good 1 through 9. It's not about the pitching that scares me. That's why all the games are such high scoring. It's about the bats for this team. They don't lay down. They don't give up.
They don't strike out, and they're not even necessarily high on base with the walks. They'll force teams into errors, and I've seen it.
Yes.
But getting to the other aspects of the matchup, you have to look at Judge. Even in 2020 and 2022, the matchups against Cleveland in the postseason, he had a solid series against them. Even though it was two games in 2020 and in 2022, not high average, but 2 or 3 homers. one big one in game four, another one in game five that pretty much sealed the deal to seal the series and won the game 3-1 or something like that. So Judge should get going. And I think Volpe could be an X factor, considering the game in April when he hit that clutch double or triple to tie the score against Class A. So you can tell he's not scared of the moment against Cleveland.
Yeah.
Even though Cleveland has the advantage in the bullpen, the way our bullpen is going.
Moose, no way. No way Cleveland has the bullpen advantage. Maybe at the back end, but Luke Weaver has been lights out. The Yankees' bullpen hasn't given up a run in almost 16 straight innings. Zero runs.
It's impeccable. Impeccable. And to conclude, like, I really do see us winning this in 5 or 6, but once again, we have to. If we're up 3-1 or 3-0 in the series or 2-1, we have to get to 3-1 or close them out in 5 and possibly not push it to 6. If we have our foot on their neck, we have to put them out their misery.
That's right.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, Moose, thank you for that. So Moose is saying Yankees in 5. I'm going to tend to agree with that. I'm going Yankees in 5, too. Yankees in 5. And by the way, if you didn't catch it before, Mets in 6. Yankees in 5, Mets in 6. I foresee a Subway Series happening right here in New York City. Let's go to Thomas in Westchester, New York. What's up, Thomas? Going once, twice. All right, Thomas, I don't know what happened. Let's go E. Frank in Astoria up next. What's up, E. Frank?
Yeah, what's up, Danielle? Great to hear you over the air right now and today. I'm very happy and glad that the Mets made it into the NLCS, but it was looking very glim about a month ago when I was talking to Cintrone on his show. And a lot of the Mets fans that I know in Corona and Flushing right now are cursing me because they didn't want the Mets to be playing in the autumn, right in October, with the City Field playing real hard and the fans cheering, all of them riding on the 7 train. They got angry. They're not happy. I don't know why, but I'm happy that the Mets made it. And the Yankees, I'm a Yankee fan. I've been a Yankees fan for almost 45 years. I haven't been watching too much in the last 10 or 15 years, but I just want to ask you, Danielle, you know, this Dodger and Mets NLCS, what does it lead on to? I mean, is the Dodgers have been, over the years, statistically winning a lot of playoff games, and the Mets have barely made it to the divisional games.
Yeah.
Do you think this series will end up with the Dodgers winning?
E. Frank, and thanks for the call there. I don't see a way. The Mets have the momentum. The starting pitching for the Dodgers has not been good, like, at all. Their pitchers don't pitch deep into games. They run the risk of overexposure to the bullpen. The Mets are bullpen killers. So I can't bet against the Mets at this point in time. They've got everything working in their favor. They've aligned their pitching staff the way that they want to. That luxury afforded to them because they won the last series in 4 games. The Dodgers, they're just kind of rolling. I mean, they went to 5. So they're just kind of rolling with the order that's been given to them. So it's really hard. Lindor has been playing like the MVP that I wish that they would name him. But of course, it's not. He's not. There's so much to like about this Mets team, provided that their bullpen stays strong. Edwin Diaz figures it out. I just don't see a way in which the Mets lose this series. And not to mention the fact that the Dodgers hitters, like their top hitters, Ohtani included, Muncy, they don't hit well against left-handed pitching. And the Mets, oh, by the way, have a couple lefties at their disposal. So I think they're in good shape, the Mets. The Mets got a favorable matchup. And I have friends that are Mets fans, and we were talking just last night. Like, who would you rather? Would you rather have had the Padres or the Dodgers? All along, I was hoping for the Dodgers, for the New York Mets. I just think it's a better matchup for them than the Padres would have been. 888-808-1019. My name is Danielle McCartan, rocking with you till midnight right here on The Fan, and we are just getting started. Give me a call. Be part of the show.